This is the age of the public life. The very fact that we have a thing called selfie sticks to take pictures of ourselves should be a big clue to how much we want to tell other people what we're up to, especially through social media. But that's a choice. How much information do we want anyone else to have about us if we do not elect to deliver that information? That is the central question in discussions of surveillance in America. The work of Edward Snowden and others indicate there's a lot of it, even though the agencies involved are very publicity shy themselves. Oregon Humanities presents a conversation project called Keeping Tabs on America, Surveillance and You. It comes to the Ashland Library tomorrow at 1. Christian Williams is a journalist, scholar, and author of Our Enemies in Blue, Police and Power in America, and American Methods, Torture and the Logic of Domination. He is the leader of that conversation project and our guest on The Exchange today. Hi, Christian.
Hello. Good morning.
Good to have you here. I want to point out that Our Enemies in Blue is more than 10 years old, so it's not like you've just burst on the scene post-Ferguson. Have you always been suspicious of concentrations of power?
Yeah, I think that'd be fair to say.
All right. So how would you characterize your approach to dealing with issues like the police and use of power and surveillance generally?
Well, in general, I think that the burden of proof needs to be on the authorities, that where there is inequality, it is up to the people who exercise power, the people who benefit from the inequality, to show that it is justified. And in terms of how that applies to coercive institutions, how that applies to the surveillance states, I think that burden has not been met, and that rather than pursuing further concentrations of power, we should work toward horizontal arrangements, more democratizing power arrangements, and investing control in people who are actually affected by the decisions that are made.
So how would that work when you talk about more horizontal distribution of power?
Well, I mean, it's a big question. I mean, that would mean that workers would be in control of workplaces, that the people who live in neighborhoods would be in control of the neighborhoods, that really the decision should be made by the people most affected by them.
All right. I've noticed your description of people have described you as an anarchist. Is that a label you apply to yourself?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay. Well, given your druthers, then, would there be any government?
Well, really, anarchism is the question is whether it makes sense to politically organize a society in terms of a state. And by state, we mean, you know, the typical Weberian definition of a set of institutions that exercise a monopoly on violence in a given territory. If we move toward a society that is less coercive, therefore also less violent, then the idea of concentrating violence in a state form sort of dissolves. So rather than relying on coercive institutions, if we could develop more cooperative ways of relating to each other, ideally the coercive element would sort of fall out of social relations.
All right, so no more coercion. And so, since there is government, though, and it is more of a vertical sort of setup, and then the government says that safety depends upon information, is it inescapable that there's going to be some amount of surveillance running through different levels of government to the people?
Yes, I think that's inherent to the project of governance.
Were there things that you thought, Christian, might happen in surveillance, say, 20 years ago that ended up coming true?
Unfortunately, I would say that far more has come true than I thought was possible. I mean, the rate of technological progress has so completely outstripped our social norms, our laws, our customs, our expectations, that where we are now was practically unimaginable when I started writing about this stuff.
So is this something like science fiction coming true in a sense?
I mean, in a way, it reaches beyond what science fiction would have even expected.
What are some of the particular things that trouble you, or the things that trouble you the most? Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, you introduced the segment by talking about selfies and social media and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that I think is particularly disturbing is how much of surveillance as it's currently conducted is participatory. How much of it is relies on us providing the information and doing so in a way that at least has the appearance of being voluntary. And, you know, in a way, social media is this very voluntary thing. You can have a Facebook account or you cannot. In another way, though, even if you personally don't engage in it, that doesn't stop other people from posting things about you, from tagging you in photos and the like, and then the collection of data that goes on as a result of that is completely beyond your control. I think we're also approaching a stage where there won't necessarily be a rule that you have to have, you know, a Facebook account, for instance, but it is increasingly socially mandatory in the same way that, you know, there's not a law that says that you have to have a phone, but getting by in present society without one becomes an impossibility, and it becomes increasingly difficult to, you know, get a job, maintain a job, stay in touch with your friends, et cetera, if you're not engaging with that technology. And I think we're approaching a point where social media will become as socially mandatory as, you know, for example, having a telephone.
Just the expectations will be there from other people that, you know, why don't you have social media?
Right, exactly. And I think it's increasingly people like, not just your friends, but people like employers, people like landlords will expect that there will be a social media profile that they will be able to check in the same way that they check a resume, in the same way that they check references. And if you don't have that, then that in itself will become suspicious.
Christian Williams is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is an author, scholar, journalist, anarchist, and the leader of an Oregon conversation project called Keeping Tabs on America, Surveillance and You. It'll come to Ashland tomorrow at 1 at the library. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your own questions, comments, observations about the surveillance state and security and how those two play with each other. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Jamie in Medford already dropped off an observation by phone. He says, too many cameras, not enough brains or eyeballs. How does that hit you, Christian?
I'm sorry, you cut out there. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, Jamie in Medford wrote, too many cameras, not enough brains or eyeballs.
I'm not sure what he means by that exactly, but one of the sort of puzzles of surveillance is that given how much information it captures, how much of it is actually useful. And one of the sort of natural checks on it traditionally has been that the more information, for example, the government sweeps in, the more work it had to do to analyze it and to make those connections, to do the work. Like, you know, you record the video and then somebody, a human being, would have to review the video. But that's less and less true as time goes on. And increasingly that is being automated, being digitized, and computers are much more efficient at making the kinds of connections, at doing the kind of social mapping than human beings are. Additionally, a lot of the use of surveillance isn't sort of preventative, it's forensic. So the NSA's unofficial slogan is collect it all, with the idea that they'll just sweep in all the information that they can get and decide later what they need to go back and look at.
So it's interesting. So essentially the computers are flagging the things that humans should eventually look at.
Well, it's more than that. If you think to basically any cop show that you've seen in which they're investigating a gang or a mob or something like that, there's always a scene where there's an office with a bulletin board or a whiteboard or something, and there's a picture of the various bad guys, and there are lines between them.
Oh, the murder board, yeah.
That explain, you know, what the relationship is. Well, Facebook does that automatically, right? Like, if you sign into social media and you friend two or three people, it will start suggesting to you automatically other people who you probably know. And it's good enough that when it suggests that you might know somebody, it's very, very likely that you do. So the kind of analysis that it used to take human workers many, many hours to produce is increasingly being automated very, very quickly. And like the Facebook example I use because it's one that people will be familiar with, but it's by no means the most sophisticated example of that. I mean, the military has software that's specifically designed to map those kinds of networks, to map communication chains, to see who in a network is an important communication node, and basically to select targets based on their positioning in the network that a computer can map automatically.
Christian, I'm curious to know your response to Edward Snowden and his big release of information about what he was doing as an analyst at the NSA, then the National Security Agency. I mean, was it when you saw the stuff that he put out there, were you thinking, "Yep, thought so," or did it even go beyond that and get you into the realm of, "Wow, I had no idea"?
First one and then the other. I mean, the way the headlines presented that, it was largely this sort of reveal that it turns out that the NSA is reading our email and listening in on our phone calls. And anyone who was familiar with the fact that the NSA was there should have known that the NSA was reading our email and listening in on our phone calls. But on the other hand, there's some of the details, like the descriptions of intercepting computers that were going to be delivered to somebody's house and implanting hardware to bug the computers. Like, that hadn't occurred to me, right? The degree to which the operations were institutionalized, the government operations were institutionalized inside communications corporations, I didn't know that. What else was surprising? The sheer cynicism in terms of talking about manipulating public communication and identifying people that they want to discredit and then pushing bad propaganda about them out into social media networks. I kind of suspected that sort of thing was happening, but the practical glee that they show in slandering people based on some fairly sophisticated notions of what kinds of rumors will get traction and what kinds of rumors will be most damaging. That was, I guess, more shocking to the conscience than the intellect.
Christian Williams, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, journalist, author, anarchist, and the leader of the Oregon Humanities Conversation Project event called Keeping Tabs on America, Surveillance and You. Next event will be tomorrow at 1 at the Ashland Library. You can join this conversation now and tell us where you land on the scale of, like, I put everything on social media to I will never have a phone. 800-838-3760 for wherever you fall on that spectrum. That's to join us by phone. Yes, by phone. 800-838-3760. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. Christian, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, who sits on the Senate Intelligence Committee, said here within the last 2 years that operations can be secret, but the law has to be known. I know I risk a logic loop in this question, but essentially, how much can we know about what is known about us?
I think it's revealing that the only reason we have even a glimpse of the scope of it is because a single person at great risk to himself spilled the beans on a huge amount of secret information. I mean, if were it not for Edward Snowden, I think we would largely be in the position of looking at what the technology can do and looking at the government's stated aims and then trying to predict what kinds of, like, how those things might intersect, right? Because of the Snowden revelations, we have some very detailed accounts of how exactly that's progressing. But the truth is, he was just a single, actually fairly low-level worker in a vast bureaucracy. So we have to assume that what he revealed still only gives us kind of a hint of how developed, how robust the surveillance operations are.
Now, the Conversation Project is obviously not just your opinions, but potentially lots of people's. Have you had the session on the road already, or is this a first tomorrow?
No, I've done this probably 10 or 12 times over the last year or so.
Does it take much to get the conversation started?
Not really. Usually people come prepared to talk. And I should say, it really is a conversation. I've probably spoken more in this interview than I will talk tomorrow.
Okay.
The idea is not for me to come and tell people what to think or even tell people what I think, but to get them talking with each other, to find out what each other think, and to sort of think through some of these questions together. So I will do a lot of framing of the issues, and I will do a lot of facilitating, but I won't actually throw out that many of my ideas.
So what tend to be the major concerns that people bring up in the conversations about surveillance?
Well, I think the people are often very concerned about the government stuff, which we've been talking about, and some people are worried about the sort of narcissistic exhibitionist culture that is promoted by social media. A lot of people are also worried about the role of corporations in surveillance and things like how surveillance is used for marketing and how that can be used to manipulate public opinion, and also things like whether their boss or their insurance company or their landlord or some other private entity is collecting information on them that may make their private life harder.
All right. So it seems like government then is not the only concern, particularly in a time when people can get their accounts hacked. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen friends on Facebook say, don't believe the stuff I said in the last 2 days because it wasn't me.
Government is really only, it's the most obvious actor, because people know to be suspicious of it. It's much harder to even recognize that, for example, private corporations that collect huge amounts of information on individual people and then sell it to marketers or sell it to their insurance companies or sell it to banks for credit reviews or that sort of thing. Like, mostly we don't even know that those companies are there. We don't have direct contact with them. We don't see what the work is. There's never an election for them. And so it's much harder to sort of stay in touch with the kinds of concerns that those other attacks on privacy take.
How willing do you find people are, and I assume the conversation turns at some point to the concept of giving up a bit of privacy for security? And I wonder, it seems that I'm sure that would come up in all of these, wouldn't it?
I think it is the implicit question that's woven in through all the rest of the discussion. And I don't think it's a question that that anyone is exactly prepared to answer. Maybe even less when this discussion is over than when it starts. And I think that that's not just true, when a dozen or so people get together in the public library and talk about this. I think that's true as a society overall, that we're faced with this situation where our, the technical capacity is for surveillance is developing really rapidly, and the demand for the information is also developing really rapidly, but our sense of what the limits of that should be really hasn't kept pace. And I think that if we're even going to be in a position to make decisions about what that balance between security and privacy is, or even whether privacy is going to continue to be a value that we hold, our understanding of these issues, both individually and collectively, is going to have to really catch up very quickly.
In a sense, we don't have the answers because we don't even have the questions yet, it sounds like.
I think that's true.
So it's not just you mentioned that as the Conversation Project ends, people should take the conversations away and think about some things in their own lives. So they get homework. How about you? I mean, have you heard some things in the Conversation Project events that have got your brain spinning in new ways?
It's been interesting to me how often people arrive at the program with concerns about that. You know, for example, I hadn't really thought about the kind of data that insurance companies collect and how that might be compromising, and how that might have like real effects on people's access to healthcare and that sort of thing. But that seems to be an issue that comes up over and over again in these. What else has been sort of new to me?
Right, but a lot of stuff. I mean, it's interesting to think about, and that you bring this up, though, but the fact that not only is there a greater capacity to move information around, there's a greater capacity to obtain information. I mean, we're talking about, you know, discussions in the last couple of years about genetic data not being allowed to be in the hands of insurance companies. There's a whole realm of stuff to talk about here. The Conversation Project is called Keeping Tabs on America, Surveillance and You. Christian Williams, the leader, has been our guest on The Exchange. You can catch him tomorrow at the Ashland Library at 1 with the discussion once again. Christian, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Cool. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Take care.